Welcome to Small Business Spoonfuls Podcast, a laid-back discussion of the serious HR topics and trends of today. Sponsored by HelpDeskForHR.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Small Business Spoonfuls Podcast. I am your host, Mason Merrill, and with me, joining me today, is my co-host, as always, the great, wonderful, and talented Lisa Smith. How are you today, Lisa?
Oh boy, I feel like the Wizard of Oz.
Right.
I am doing great today, Mason. Thank you for that brilliant introduction.
Yeah, I know we've had a little bit of a busy morning, but nothing we can't handle day to day, right?
Oh yeah, you know, we just take it all in stride.
Right, exactly. So we've been out for a couple weeks, but we are back here today. We're going to have one show this week, and then we're going to take the holiday break, and then we're going to be back with one show next week, and then we're going to see how we're going to do going forward, if one show or two shows, if we can get to it, but at least one show every week. So look forward to that. We're glad to be back here. Hope everybody's doing well. Hope everybody's doing HR like a boss. Hope everybody's staying safe out there. And the topic we are talking about today is the hazards of being too nice in the workplace. So this is, that's kind of, you might have seen that title and been like, too nice? I always want to be nice, or I always want to be kind to people. But that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about being nice day to day, right, Lisa?
Yeah, I mean, I came across this, and if you want to go look this up for yourself, this is an article that was in the Harvard Business Review, and it's a gentleman by the name of Timothy R. Clark. And so he put together this article on, you know, why being nice in the workplace or cultivating a culture of nice could actually backfire on you.
Right, exactly. So we're going to kind of go through some pros and cons of this type of culture, and we'll just kind of start at the beginning. Why do organizations pursue niceness? What's that? What is the reasoning behind that?
Well, it's usually, you know, sort of that desire, like you said, that we all have. I mean, we want to get along. We want there to be a harmonious work environment. We don't want to, you know, have any more conflict than necessary. So we're avoiding conflict. We're gaining the approval of others. Maybe it's the approval of big boss. Maybe it's big boss gaining the approval of the employees. It could be a variety of motivations for this nice culture.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes though, people, when they don't fully understand how to navigate in a diverse and inclusive workplace, they just turn to nice. So, and he brings out, he says, when you see diverse employee populations self-segregate, based on natural affinity groups, it could be an indicator of an unspoken separate but nice philosophy. So sometimes it's just that awkwardness that just, they just want to be nice because they don't know what else to do.
Yeah, that's right. And we're not talking about being hateful to everybody who walks in your door. You know, we're just, you know, you want to use nice, a lot of times people want to use niceness, like you said, to motivate them and hold them accountable kind of thing. But people can take that the wrong way and turn it into, well, you're just nice and I can do whatever I want here in the workplace. But really, there's a balance when it comes to getting work done and also being overly friendly with everybody in the office. So,
go ahead.
Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, you know, sometimes if the big bosses, if the leadership in the company are kind of tough, put it that way, he calls them fear-based organizations, then the culture of the staff population in general might turn to a culture of niceness out of fear, because they feel like if we're just nice and friendly and cordial, it'll just keep us safe because we don't want to poke the bear upstairs, so to speak. And so that can be a thing. And then another thing too was it could be a flaw in management style, that instead of holding people accountable, you just want to be nice to them and you think that's going to motivate them to work, when maybe that's not always what happens.
Right, exactly. So kind of the dangerous sides of a nice culture leading into that, crisis activation. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So one of the downfalls of the nice culture can be that, you know, sometimes in a nice culture, people use the ability or the thought of mind, I guess, a top of mind awareness to act preemptively. They wait until there's a problem that's just too big to ignore. You know, how did we get to this point? Why is this such a crisis happening? Could we have not caught the problem before? But the answer is usually yes, you could have caught the problem, but you just were too worried about being nice to address a problem. There was a terrible case that Mr. Oh goodness, I have to go back and look at his name, Mr. Clark. That was too easy. I thought I was wrong. Mr. Clark quotes in his column here, and he says that there was a Dr. George Tyndall, and he was a campus gynecologist at the University of Southern California. And for 25 years, he was being, people were claiming sexual abuse against him. And they just kept ignoring it. It was kind of that, oh no, he's nice, we're nice, nobody has problems here kind of mentality. And it ended up being a $1.1 billion settlement for that crisis mode that they entered into because they had just not wanted to address the issue head on.
Yeah, that's a really long time of just brushing things under the rug and not taking care of the big problem because everybody... I'm the type of person who wants to get along with everybody. You know, that's how I operate day to day. But there's things that need to be handled. And we're not talking about getting along day to day and trying to be nice to your coworkers and things like that and your employees. We're talking about handling certain situations and not brushing them under the rug because you want to avoid confrontation. Like this settlement ended up to be $1.1 billion. So that's a lot of money. So the next point he brings out in this article is that it talks about choked innovation. So innovation kind of, it disrupts the status quo. And so, but innovation is also the lifeblood of growth. So if everybody is just being nice all the time, it can turn into, oh, we're not getting much innovation in the, into the workforce there.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of muzzle yourself with niceness. So right. Instead of getting in there and getting your hands dirty and thinking through the problems and maybe even debating them out a little bit, you know, it just turns into the nice, you know, like, oh, I don't want to argue with you. And so I'm just going to let you think what you want to think because I don't want to like pose a different side. And, you know, like that movie Divergent from years ago, Mr. Clark here talks about divergent thinking is necessary in order to innovate and move forward and do something fresh and new. You know, you have to break away from that standard. And so if we kind of don't want to break out of that comfort zone and we just want everything to be okay, then we're going to choke out our innovation and we're not going to move forward.
Right, exactly. And then moving on to our talent, how it can affect our talent. You know, talented people want to make a meaningful contribution to the company. So what in a healthy culture, how do good talent need to operate?
Well, yeah, talent, you know, speaking like in this context, people who do want to think divergently, what's going to happen is if the culture is nice and they do try to challenge and they do say, hey, what about this? Or maybe we should shake it up and do it this way. And then everybody just says, okay, and nobody challenges you, then how do you ever know if you're right or wrong? You know, you can yes people to death. Sometimes people need to hear the opposite side of the argument in order to really come up with the best solution. And, you know, one of the guys in the article here, he worked for a large pharmaceutical company. He was quoted as saying, I'd rather work in an authoritarian toxic culture than a nice toxic culture, because in the authoritarian toxic culture, they would at least tell me I'm wrong when I challenge a status quo. So, you know, they would at least argue back with me and not in an argumentative way, but they would think it through and debate the subject instead of just nodding their head. And so that can also be very toxic for innovation, but also just for the individual. They just feel like they're dying if they can't, you know, help things move forward because everybody's too nice.
Yeah, right. And that kind of reminds me of the phrase toxic positivity as well. You know, you have that person who's just overly positive about everything because they're trying to cover up things that, you know, that might be going on or whatnot that are bad just because they're trying to keep everything positive all the time, happy, friendly. So it kind of relates to that toxic, nice, building a toxic, nice environment, toxically nice environment. I can't speak today in that aspect as well. So how would this toxic niceness culture affect decision making?
Well, so then if everybody is just so nice and there's a very low tolerance for candor and for bucking the status quo and for thinking through new ideas, then eventually we're just going to get into this stage of chronic indecisiveness. And so, one of the examples here in the article, the gentleman says, I worked for a healthcare organization that became so nice, they decided to adopt a consensus decision-making model. And it was an unmitigated disaster because the CEO pulled the plug on it. And, you know, after 3 months, they felt like they were all just swimming in ambiguity because nobody would challenge the idea of anyone else. And it was always just like, okay, we're all good. And then nothing ever happened.
Yep. So that kind of point leads to the next point, which is learned helplessness. So by it by nobody making decisions and there's just a lot of passivity and conformity, nobody's challenging each other, you're really teaching your employees helplessness in the company within, trying to make decisions and trying to come up with ideas and move forward and be, cutting edge type of situation.
Yeah. And so basically the nice culture just teaches your employees, teaches your stakeholders that they're just helpless. Their opinions don't matter, that they're not welcome actually, because it's not nice to have a dissenting opinion. And then basically you feel like you've been placed into a straitjacket and people just, as it says here in the article, they just throw their hands up and just keep quiet because there's no use. The culture just doesn't tolerate the level of candor they want to give. So,
right. Exactly. Yeah. So, leading on to kind of the next section, what are some things we can do to combat this toxic niceness as we've talked about here?
Well, you know, I have recently been doing some seminars, half-day seminars, on motivating and engaging and inspiring employees. And one of the things that we talk about in that seminar is clarifying expectations, having good standards of performance, and, you know, having good, clear, you know, policies and procedures. And so if it's very clear that in this, you know, collaborative environment, that the expectation is you're going to be held accountable. And the expectation is that you're going to give candid feedback and you're going to ask tough questions, not in a combative method or way, but just to really get in there and do the think through. You know, then those expectations will be there and you can be nice and you can be polite to people while also challenging the thought process. So, you know, have an agenda when you have your meetings and have the layout of this is what we're going to do. We're going to explain it. Then we're going to have a feedback session and make sure that it's very clear to everyone. We want to hear all views.
Yep, that's right. And so the next section coming in is publicly challenge the status quo you helped to create. So you want to try to help other people, get through that fear of truth telling and things like that, because, if you can't speak to each other, you're never going to get anywhere. I know you and I work pretty closely in our company together. And some days we don't like each other because of the things we say. You know, we get along pretty good, but there's those tough conversations sometimes you need to have to really suck it out of somebody. Like, what's going on? How do we handle this problem? How do we do this? And so we don't want to be afraid of telling the truth to our employees. And a toxic nice culture, as we've talked about, can promote that, being afraid of talking to our coworkers or employees or anything like that.
Yeah. And as leadership, if leadership will take the lead in saying, you know what, I'm going to challenge my own thought. You know, in the past, I've said we should do things this way, but now I'm thinking that I was wrong about that, or we've evolved past that, or, you know, don't let your ego get in the way. You be the first one to step up and tell the truth and make the change. Right. And then everyone else will be like, oh, she's open to criticism. He's willing to hear what we really think, you know, and then that will start to play through in the culture.
Yeah, exactly. So provide air cover for candor.
Yeah, I like this one. Mr. Clark says, when people do have the courage to express their dissenting views and speak candidly, then you should protect them, because that is going out on a risk. They're going out on a ledge, they feel like, very often. I'm taking this risk. This could end it all for me if I'm too honest. But then when they see that they're out there and they're not alone and that they're safe, and you're going to say, thank you for that opinion. I appreciate hearing that feedback. Maybe you're going to use it, maybe you're not, but you appreciate hearing that an intelligent brain had an idea and you thought it through with them.
Right. Yeah. So this last kind of point to wrap it all up, confront performance problems immediately. I think that one kind of speaks for itself. If somebody's really having performance problems in the office, you don't want to push it aside. You don't want to let this go on for 2 years, you know, that you're on the payroll and they're not really getting much done or whatnot. And that can really affect the overall attitude of the office and things like that. So we want to make sure we're confronting those performance problems. And, you know, like I said earlier, we're not talking about being nice to each other day to day and being friendly with people in the office and things like that. We're talking about the niceness culture that can cover up a lot of problems, that if you just take care of them right away, you'll have a pretty decent culture and flowing through everybody and honest, and, you know, you're taking care of problems. You're also taking care of business, which in the end will make the company more money, right?
Yeah. You know, I like to think of the workplace as some sort of an extended family. And, you know, have you ever known the nice family, like the family that was just all so nice and everything just got swept under the rug and nobody ever talked about feelings, and they ended up being more dysfunctional than the family that argued at Thanksgiving dinner? You know, like, at least those folks got it out in the open.
Yeah,
you know,
30 years later, nobody ever talks to anybody again because it all came out, you know, after a big blow up kind of thing.
Yeah, there was just so much resentment and so much niceness. And so anyway, that can also be that same model in the work family, you know? So this is why honesty and security and leadership has to take the lead in making sure people know that they are welcome to dissent and welcome to give opinions and welcome to submit different ideas that maybe go away from the status quo. If you don't use them, great. Thank them for it and talk it through with them. But maybe you will. Maybe you will see that new idea, that new innovative thing that launches your brand forward. And so don't be too nice.
Right, exactly. So I think that ties it up pretty good. Like I said, once again, this is just advice. This is just, you know, you may disagree with some of the things we say all the time, but like, it's just kind of advice. And we just kind of want to talk about this. And it's just a good topic to think about. And really assess, if you're the employer, look at your office and look how things are running, and look, you know, especially with COVID, because everybody's been virtual forever. And if you're coming back to the office now, you know, now you're redeveloping that culture almost of what's going on. So anyway, that's just a good point we wanted to talk about. Here in about 2 hours, we have our boss call coming up. Lisa, do you want to give a little primer for that?
Yeah. So, boy, talk about a powerful boss call today. This is one that's been highly requested for several months. And I've come up with a wonderful mental health professional who's going to guide us through the topic of burnout in the workplace. And we're specifically talking to HR professionals who are burnout after a year and a half of this COVID craziness that is still not over yet, by the way. We're still dealing with this in HR. And then, not to mention the burnout of the world around them, you know, all of their workers, the demotivation. So we're going to really break into that today.
Yeah. So it's going to be a good discussion. Might be a little therapeutical if you're watching. So if you're a Boss Call member, make sure you're signed up and come join us today. That's at 1:30, correct, Lisa?
Yes. It's actually 1 o'clock central time.
1 o'clock central time. Okay. So So about an hour from now, actually. So if you're a Boss Call member, come sign up. And if you're not, if you want to just purchase the call for one day, we have it in the feed, in the Facebook feed here. So check that out. And if you'd love to be, we'd love to have you as a full-time member of our Boss Calls community too. So there's some information in those links for that. All right. Well, unless you have anything else to say, I think that does us in.
No. Yeah. I think we're done in. So Thanks for everything today, guys. Thanks for tuning in. I see we've had several, you know, folks viewing our live. So that's awesome. Continue to hang in there with us. And until we see you again, I'm Lisa Smith.
And I'm Mason Merrill. Always remember to be reasonable. Don't be too nice. Be honest. Be audit secure. I'm just adding so many things to our thing. But be audit secure and do it HR like a boss. And we will see you next week. Everybody have a safe and great holiday weekend. Bye.
If you would like to learn more about our team and the services we provide, head over to helpdeskforhr.com. Our 8,000 plus members enjoy the essential training, tools, and support they need to keep up with ongoing legal changes, as well as maintaining solid HR and employment law compliance. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you like what you hear, we'd love to hear from you, either by leaving us a review or you can email us at support@helpdeskforhr.com.